G'day, g'day. We are sitting back on the couch where each week at ABC Radio National, we take a look at what's new in series, TV and streaming. I'm Jason DeRosso. With me is Wenli Ma.
Hello.
Hello, Wenli. I've got a question for you this week to begin with. There was a survey done last year into streaming numbers. Can you guess which old TV show or legacy TV show was the most watched in America according to this survey last year? So we're talking about old shows. We're talking about everything from Hill Street Blues to Seinfeld to The X-Files.
Well, I'm going to guess Friends because young people seem to love it, which is kind of weird to me, but I'm going to guess you're telling me something different.
I am telling you something different. The most watched show, according to this Nielsen survey from last year, was The Little House on the Prairie. 13 billion minutes watched.
That's crazy. Yeah. Do you know that 1974 series with Michael Landon and his incredible hair? You cannot find it in Australia. Unless you have like an old VHS or DVD lying around.
Wow, that's amazing. That's surprising to me. You know what came in at number two in the most watched legacy TV series?
Was it Homicide: Life on the Street?
It was Gunsmoke.
Oh, wow. People are really into like proper old
westerns. What is that telling you? If you are a TV executive in 2025, ooh, you are wanting to roll out some Western IP.
Yeah, I mean, this is why Taylor Sheridan and his Yellowstone like portfolio exactly. of stuff is such a big deal over there.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, the results that came in for 2025, which came in the 2026 Nielsen poll, had Gunsmoke at number one of all the legacy TV streaming, and it had bumped up its minutes to about 20 billion minutes, and streaming across the board is up 20% this year. Isn't that amazing?
Surprising.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you may have guessed, therefore, dear listener, that first up we're going to be looking at the reboot of The Little House on the Prairie, which is over at Netflix, a reimagining of the semi-autobiographical bunch of novels about frontier life by Laura Ingalls Wilder, which inspired, of course, as we've mentioned, a hugely popular series in the 1970s. It was a favourite of Ronald Reagan. And it remains very popular to this day. As we record the reboot, the new show is number one on the Netflix charts. Here is a taste.
Once upon a time, Ma and Pa and Mary and Laura left the big woods of Wisconsin and moved to the prairie, where a new life was waiting for them. Every day and every night was an adventure. And even though they were all alone and very small against the sky and the stars, they were happy because they were a family and they were together.
I love how it has that little Netflix boom.
They always work the tidum in.
Now, if you were a certain brand of conservative, I think you'd be pretty happy with that teaser. Mm. Though it doesn't really reflect the tone of the show at all.
No. I mean, it is still a very wholesome, and I think it show, and it is kind of the first two or three episodes of the series, but this new series, as it gets into it, really expands the world beyond what you might think this story is. I mean, as someone who did not grow up watching the original series, and I haven't read the books, I know, I have friends who are really mad at me. But I have an American iTunes account, so I actually did download the first season of the original
74.
One. Yeah, yep. So I bought that. And it was so interesting watching that after watching this new series, because you can absolutely see the differences. I actually really quite like this new one because it is so much more considerate, it's so much more inclusive of Native American characters, of Black American characters, which is not necessarily like they haven't like wokeified it as some people on the internet would call it.
Let's take a moment here. Megyn Kelly, who of course is a conservative commentator, I guess you'd call it her, posted on Twitter that, and this was last year, posting on Twitter to Netflix saying, if you wokeify Little House on the Prairie, I will make it my singular mission to absolutely ruin your project. And we haven't heard from her since.
No one, there doesn't seem to have been, 5 days since release, a huge kind of uproar from the right flank of American politics, which I found a little bit surprising. Maybe they're a bit busy, you hope they would be.
Well, there was a reply from, one of the original cast members, Melissa Gilbert, who played Laura, did say that the original show was a bit woke. I mean, she claimed that, the original show tackled racism, addiction, nativism, anti-Semitism, misogyny, rape, spousal abuse, on and on. So she was pointing out that, look, the show was already quite curious. And Michael Landon, who was the star and also the director, was a card-carrying Republican, but it was a show that appealed.
1970s Republican.
Absolutely. And it was a show that came up after the Watergate scandal. So it was about its celebration of virtues of honesty and hard work and all of that were very much of a time, as you say. Yeah,
definitely. And actually, when the books were written in the 1930s about these adventures and experiences in the 1870s, it was a political project to start with, because Laura Ingalls Wilder, her daughter Rose Wilder Lane, is a huge libertarian, was incredibly anti-FDR, anti-New Deal. So the stories that originally were about this vision of America, this mythology of America, that was supposed to be about grit and resilience and independence and not government intervention or handouts. So it served its purpose in this post-depression era in the US.
And then in the 70s on TV, it gets kind of reinvented slightly as this kind of, well, let's do things, let's rediscover American integrity and hard work and being honest and so forth post-Watergate. But both sides of the aisle apparently were fans. Bill Clinton was apparently a fan. I think what's really interesting about this show to me is talking about First Nations people. Mm. It's fascinating, and they don't hide from it. Very early on, here's a father-daughter conversation about the Osage, First Nations community on this land that this family has come to settle, and it's very contentious. And from the get-go, everyone's talking about how there's a tension here. This is not empty land. Here's a little conversation that I think runs very much counter to the tone of the trailer that I just played. Here we go.
I hate being inside all day when the prairie is right out here. What am I ever going to need in a book?
Books help you know about the whole wide world. Not just Wisconsin. Not just the prairie. All kinds of places. All kinds of people.
You take me to meet the Osage then? We could ride out to the camp and say hello. Ma says they're leaving soon, and I don't want to miss my chance.
We'll see.
Yes, and, in the writing team that they have on this new production, they've got two writers with Native American heritage. One of them has Osage heritage, and there is a director who has Native American heritage as well, who actually helmed the 7th episode, which is very much dealing with this idea of, this debate, this question over whether or not these settlers were doing the right thing. Mm. You might get some flack from certain segments of the audience who will go, why did you go and ruin Little House on the Prairie by putting in all these contemporary politics? But they're not contemporary. That is actually what happened in the 19th century. Mm. And one of the other things is they brought back a character called Dr. George Tan, who's a Black American doctor, who was actually in Laura Ingalls Wilder's books, and he was a historical figure who was not in the 1970s show.
Oh, was he not? See, I thought, I knew about him as a figure in my reading around this, but I thought that I'd read he was in the show. Ah, so in the books, yeah.
Yeah, so he's in the books, but he's not in the show, because in the 1970s show, this whole chapter that they spend season one with in this series is just like a two-hour pilot episode in 1974, and then they move on to Walnut Grove, which is the milieu that people are most familiar with.
Yeah. Look, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it was filmed in Canada, so not very American. And the lead is an Australian, yeah. Luke Bracey.
Yeah.
But I think...
He's good in it.
He's good. But I think this is reflective of this era, of this time, and what American myth-making is today, which is that it is a lot more contested.
Oh, no, absolutely. And I think this also hits... Well, it's a show that ticks all the boxes for family viewing. Obviously, it's a family show, but and it does that pretty well. And I think actually the politics that it's injected into it or it chooses to showcase are quite interesting, and the way that it explores those politics are worthwhile. And I mean, it's not particularly sort of groundbreaking in terms of its dramaturgy or any of that, but I think what it's trying to do,
it's
interesting.
It's very solid. It's done very well. And at the end of it, I watched the whole series and I was like, I wasn't expecting to be moved by it, but there is this entire thing around community and actually needing each other and being part of something bigger than your own, you and your own. I think the show is very much arguing that if all you look out for is yourself, you're not going to survive.
Okay. That is The Little House on the Prairie, season one, 8 episodes. Available to stream over at Netflix. Okay, we've only got a few minutes left, but in the time we do have, let's talk about the miniseries over at Binge starring Jennifer Garner as a celebrity chef who, I shouldn't laugh, she's coping with a devastating loss, the loss of her husband at the beginning of this, and she decides, I'm going to have a weekend where I'm going to spend time with a small group of friends, each one representing a different decade of my life. And she's a celebrity chef, so she's also invited this weird mega fan as well, who turns out to be a very accomplished woman who's an airline pilot. So it stars Chloe Sevigny. Chloe Sevigny, Regina Hall, Gemma Chan.
Darcy Carden. What a great cast.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a bit of the trailer for you.
So I'm planning on having a girls' weekend
to Nantucket
with a friend from each phase of life.
What are you scared of?
I'm at a 3-day dinner party with a bunch of women I've never met.
Yeah, this is terrifying.
I really need this weekend.
Your husband just died and you made us all gift baskets.
This is how I deal. We are all dealing with a lot.
I have the results of your biopsy.
What if I'm not brave enough to be myself?
Your best friends in the world are here. What do you want to do?
Have a goddamn pajama dance party.
Enjoy your Golden Girls weekend.
Golden Girls, wow.
Respectfully.
You know, Dorothy and Blanche were actually in their 50s when they shot that.
Shut your mouth right now.
Look, what a cast, what a setting, because it's shot, it was set in on Nantucket, which is like this very upper middle class slash rich American island for rich people off the East Coast. You know, it's flowing linens, it's gorgeous Pottery Barn-esque showroom.
And the food's great.
And the food looks fantastic.
Good food porn.
And here's the thing that I actually do like about this show, which is that I think for 10 years, ever since the first season of Big Little Lies, every time you get these prestige TV shows, with these like very high profile female acting casts, there is a dead person or a missing person. There is a mystery to be solved. And here, this is a character-driven relationship drama about women's friendships and how sometimes you really just don't like your friends that much. And it was such a relief to not be like, oh my God, but who did it?
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah, but there are secrets.
There are secrets.
They're going to come out.
Yes, somebody did die, but there was no mystery around it.
No. Yeah, true. I mean, it's a bingo card. You know, all the boxes are filled for middle aged feel good weepy female skewed. Right. It's got grief, parenting, illness, career, work life balance. Work life balance is kind of an interesting part of it. Career, I thought, was pretty interesting, and how we present ourselves to the world, because as a celebrity chef, she's big on social. So that dimension to it.
And then the people who know us the best and how we may have been, you know, gotten further away from that person, but also that you are different and you evolve through different parts of your life. And so your friends from different eras of your life know a different version of you. And there's tension and conflict around the fact that they think you've changed, but it is an evolution.
The teenage daughter looking at you going, I actually know you better than any of them.
Yes. So all these different aspects of ourselves that we present to different people, I think it's very well performed. It's pretty well directed. Like, it is not a groundbreaking series, but it was just such a lovely kind of you know, cozy watch where I wasn't trying to, I wasn't rolling my eyes at like some detective.
Yeah. Based on Ellen Hildebrand's best-selling book, by the way, for people interested. All right. That was Five Star Weekend, 8 episodes streaming over at Binge. That is it for another episode of The Couch. We've enjoyed having you sit here between us. We look forward to making room for you on The Couch next week as well. I'm Jason DeRosso.
I'm Wenli Ma.
See ya.
Bye.